From the Mighty 990 Broadcast Center, it's time to Wake Up Memphis.
Good morning, Memphis. Welcome to the morning show. Hope you are all doing well on this Thursday. Wow, it is Thursday. Quite literally, it has felt like a month just getting through this week. Hey, you heard right before we came on air that the Shelby County Republican, Women's Club has partnered up with the Mid-South Food Bank as they are trying to fight hunger in this region by hosting a mobile food drive at Big B Coffee. That is in Germantown. Have you guys been over there? We've done a remote or two there before. So what we're going to do is we're going to help the ladies with the Shelby County Republicans Women's Club. They are incredible. They are my friends. And we're actually going to do the show live there tomorrow, taking the show live on the road. So we would love if you drop by. I know a lot of people have the day off, seeing that it is Good Friday. And so drop by. When you drop by, bring some non-perishable food items. I remember my mom and me, we would used to do this back in the day. And we would show up at the local food bank and we would drop off canned green beans and carrots and everything that I hated, I gave to the food bank. Because I was a spoiled little brat that only wanted to eat candy. And I know you guys are better than me. You can grab a cup of coffee and join the morning show. Maybe we even put you on air. Our listeners show up. We'll just do our Friday with friends live at Big B Coffee and you'll join us. Speaking of events, tonight I will be speaking at the Whitehaven Republican Club at the YMCA in Germantown. Now, I'm really excited about this. I'm honored. I'm not Todd Starnes, my boss. I am not the best orator in this city or county or country, but I'm honored that they wanted my insights. And so what we're going to do, it starts at 6 o'clock again. This is at the Whitehaven YMCA at 6 o'clock, 6 to 8. There will be refreshments, a lot of Republicans there. And I encourage all of the Republicans in the surrounding area. Maybe you're not in that club. Maybe you're in the Cordova Club or the East Memphis Club, Shelby County Club. Show up and support our friends, not because I'm speaking there, but because I love the work that they are doing in Whitehaven. And so all of that information is going to be found on our Stop Memphis Crime. Also, I will post it on my Facebook as well as we get through this show. So this is going to be a big one, only because we have invited the mayors of America's most dangerous cities to the most dangerous city in America. That happens today. Well, I believe they showed up yesterday. And all of these discussions with the Brandon Johnsons from Chicago, and I almost want to say Lori Lightfoot. Rare do I say I miss Lori Lightfoot. She was the, you know, the black lesbian that was the last mayor of Chicago. I mean, Brandon Johnson makes her look like Steve Bannon. I mean, genuinely, Brandon Johnson is just so far left. He's a radical communist. So he's in town, Karen Bass, the mayor from Los Angeles, Eric Adams, who he needs to get back to New York. I was driving into work this morning and I was listening to the morning news and they are dealing with crime at an unprecedented level. On social media, there is this series of young women that are being actually beat in the face walking down the streets of New York. Word comes out yesterday, a person was standing down in the subway system and a criminal thug pushed that person right into the tracks. So I don't know that I want Eric Adams coming to my city, to your city, and giving Mayor Paul Young some advice on public safety. Fix your own problems and don't come to Memphis. So a lot of our listeners are pretty fired up about this only because the memo from the mayor's office is that this is a black-only event. Now, I want you to think for one moment, first of all, how insanely racist that appears. Even coming out of my mouth, I feel almost weird saying it. So it's 20 mayors across the country in the big cities. It is black people only. No white mayors were allowed. Now, think for one moment if the roles were reversed, if the shoe is on the other foot. Imagine, say, the Germantown mayor were to have a meeting, launch a coalition of white mayors in America showing up to the burbs. Can you imagine, first of all, how quickly that mayor would be canceled? There would be national outrage and for good reason. Because we should not be looking at the mayor's pigment when talking about our public safety problem here. We should be looking at the mayor that is actually competent and able to do the best job for his city, making it safe, then bring their ideas to the Mid-South. Race should play no factor in who shows up at the mayor's big coalition. Now, I've got the name of it because it is actually an initiative started by our mayor. This isn't Eric Adams' brainchild. This isn't, you know, the idea of Brandon Johnson. So it's called the Black Mayor's Coalition on Crime. Mr. Young described it as an initiative to harness the collective power of black mayors across the nation to fight crime. Now, my boss took a stab at this on his national show yesterday. And I was driving downtown and I was listening to the Todd Starnes show, which you should listen to at 11 to 2. And here was Todd's take on this mayor meeting coming up today. Take a listen in Cut 24.
Now, I don't mean to throw water here on Mayor Young and his initiative, but I'm wondering if this is actually a good look that all of the most deadly cities in America are actually led by black men and women. You can't make it up. That's the message, right? He said, we're bringing the mayors of the most dangerous cities in America to Memphis. And all the mayors happen to be black. Now, you can't read anything into that. And it would be wrong to do that. But the optics here of what the mayor is trying to do, that it's insane. And nobody's willing to point that out except for yours truly.
And me.
So would it kill the group to bring in a white guy? Just from a safe city. Oh, here's one. There's a new mayor in. Oh, this might work. The new mayor of Wichita. She's a libertarian. She's conservative, and she's also Asian American. Oh, I'm being told that would be worse than bringing the white guy. Okay, I see. All right, I don't know about these things. I'm learning as we go here. But in all seriousness, Is there a black Republican mayor of a safe city in America? And if there is, why not invite that person to come to the gathering? Why would you intentionally exclude mayors of some of these safest cities in America?
Todd on his national show yesterday, and that's such a great point. I mean, you should find a black Republican mayor, and there are some in this country. Now, the reason that those black mayors don't count and will not get the mayor's invite is because they're Republicans. And we've seen that with our Republican friends, speaking of Whitehaven, where they have been blacklisted because you surely cannot be a African-American if you're a Republican. And that's why there will be no Republican black mayors at this event today. So here is Mayor Paul Young 2 days ago at a presser. He talked about this a little bit more. Take a listen in Cut 26. We'll come back and react.
Oh, it feels good. We're going to have mayors from 18 different cities that will be here talking about different challenges in their communities and how they are approaching challenges with crime. And you just, it's just another step in our efforts. We believe that we can learn from each other. And with Memphis being the largest majority black city in the nation, we thought that it was important to invite black mayors from across the country here to talk about this challenge.
One of our listeners wrote the following question on our X account, and I thought it was really interesting. Were the mayors of local municipalities invited since Memphis's crime issues impact all of Shelby County? Right? Like, if our crime in the city, Memphis Metro, is crossing over into DeSoto, if it's crossing into Tipton, if it's crossing into Fayette, if it's crossing into, and those are the counties, but think of the towns, Germantown, Collierville, why aren't those mayors also invited? Unless, of course, it is a black-only event. Makes sense. You wouldn't invite those mayors. Okay. So this is all because, again, I say it, and I don't want to sound like a broken record, but in this city, race trumps everything. And what I find really sad about it is yesterday afternoon, there was a press conference with Senator Bill Hagerty, and I attended it. And oh, poor Bill Hagerty. He was flanked to his right and to his left with radical activist. And I found it interesting, the senator was the only one that talked about black victims of crime. And he's a white guy. Senator Hagerty also joins the show this morning at 8 or 8:07. Now, all of the black liberals that are, there were city council members, there was the police chief, she was there, there were the mayor of both the county and the city, Lee Harris and Mayor Paul Young, and a state rep or two, Democrats, all black people. Why didn't they talk one bit about the news that happened yesterday where two more black victims of crime were shot? I don't get it. I genuinely do not understand. And I'm curious to hear from our listeners why black victims of crime in this city seem to not matter. To Senator Bill Hagerty, Senator Marsha Blackburn, you better believe they talk about those victims constantly on this show. So here's our telephone number, 901-260-5926, 901-260-5926. Now, some of you guys are weighing in this morning. Philip wrote, this meeting is racist. What if a white mayor called a meeting and only invited white mayors to come? They would be screaming racism. Donna writes, this is the blind leading the blind. Mitch says, why not invite mayors from other cities that have actually improved their crime rates instead of their failures? Blake, one of our listeners, said the world's going to implode with such stupidity in a single location. Laura takes us back to the history books. She says, I don't know why anybody is surprised with this news. In his acceptance speech, he said he was going to make black and brown people his priority and forget about the rest of the citizens. Jenny added this. He meets with gang members and other failures for advice. You would think he had a plan when he took this job. Stupidity knows no bounds. Now, speaking of yesterday's press conference with Senator Bill Hagerty, because he came to Memphis to discuss our crime problem. All right, there's a lot happening here. So they have a closed door meeting, excuse me, and then after the fact, they took a couple questions from the press. There were two TV reporters there, and there was Bill Dries from the Daily Memphian and a commercial appeal reporter. And I use that term with air quotes. Every one of their questions, you guys, was about police brutality. I'm sitting there, I'm thinking, as we sit in the most dangerous city in America, all they wanted to talk about was policing. And so it was finally my turn to ask a question. And I found my backbone in my spine, and I said, so when you talk to the senator and seeing that both Senator Blackburn and Senator Hagerty have been pretty vocal about releasing violent offenders back out onto the streets, did Senator convey that? Did the senator convey that to local leaders? Because the police chief was there and also the district attorney. And the mayor looked at me and I thought, if looks could kill, bury me. I thought I was like, oh no, they're going to throw me out. He said, what kind of question is that? I said, let me rephrase. We do have a violent crime problem in this city, and these violent perpetrators are being released back out onto the streets. Was there any cohesive, unifying message coming from the DA all the way up to the federal government with our senator being here that would send that message to the rest of the citizens that if you commit the crime, you are going to serve the time? And here was how they both responded. Here is Paul Young and DA Steve Mulroy on bail. Take a listen in Cut 17.
So I know that MPD has efforts where we are working to build a repeat offender registry so that we make sure that those that are continuing to do crime, that we're getting them off the streets.
This is a policy matter and a constitutional matter. It'd probably be better that that law didn't pass. But of course, you know, that's not up to me, and I will faithfully apply whatever law is passed as the DA.
So there you go. 901-260-5926 is our telephone number. 901-260-5926. We'll be right back. And welcome back to the morning show. Again, I will invite all of you to come out to the Whitehaven Republican Club. I know Todd will be there. I will be there. I will be speaking a little bit. It's going to be fun because a lot of times there will be a Q&A, and I don't think folks know this, but as someone whose job is literally to interview people and ask questions, yes, people can ask me a couple questions after I speak a little bit, but I'm going to ask the audience some questions because I am constantly learning. You know, it's very interesting to me. Some people will ask if I have always been this way, if I've been this vocal on these issues that we talk about every morning on the show. You know, fun fact, I went to a school in Ohio. I studied political science, got a minor in journalism, and I thought I was going to do TV news. And I was going to be a straight news reporter. I got an internship at a Fox affiliate in Dayton, Ohio. And I remember it was right during the middle of the pandemic. My internship started in January. By March, I was out of there. What was interesting is I saw how corrupt local media is. And a lot of people thought, well, because it's a Fox affiliate, that they were not a propaganda machine to the deep state. Oh, my goodness. It opened my eyes in a way that I just... You can't learn these things in journalism school. And I remember during the pandemic, as you recall, President Trump would have his task force combating COVID-19. And they would go to the steps of the White House every single day in the Rose Garden, and they would deliver remarks. And the TV journalists would just sit around and openly mock that man and his entire administration. My family is deeply pro-life, as am I. And in January, again, I was still in my internship. My family, every year, we go to the Right to Life, the march in Washington, D.C. And I remember at the producers meeting in the morning, they discussed what they should actually include in today's show. And there was the school that I went to sent like 800 kids to Washington, D.C. And that's a big story for a Dayton news market. They refused to cover it. So my eyes were being opened, but the pressure to actually... To fall in step with media and these journalists who claim to be unbiased, who actually claim to be objective, there was a lot of pressure to be that straight news reporter, but nothing about it was straight news and nothing about it was objective at all. And over time, it did take a toll. And so when I got this job in Memphis, I remember telling Todd, I just want to be a straight news reporter. I don't want to be a Republican. I don't want to be a Democrat. My job is to just deliver the facts, because that's what I was taught in journalism school, and that's what I was taught. And my internships at the Fox affiliate. Fast forward to today, March 28th of 2024, I have become a subjective news reporter. And I would not call myself a straight news reporter anymore. I would say I am a proponent of truth, and I am team God, and I am team truth. And if that makes me a Republican conservative contributor, then I'm gladly going to be that person. Because to be an objective news reporter in this city is to be a leftist and an activist. And I just refuse to do that. So let's talk about the activists on the school board at Germantown Municipal School District. So, of course, this is one of the most radical pro-leftist, and now I guess pro-Hamas school boards in America, because they are under fire for hosting a Ramadan party with teachers and staff that included anti-Israel propaganda. Now, this story is up on toddstarnes.com. The staff at Houston Middle School, so this is not the high school, this is at the middle school, held a Muslim-centric celebration that featured a conversation on how to support Muslim students. The celebration was posted on the school's Facebook page. It included a photograph message that had been placed on these tables, and one of our listeners got their hands on this flyer. Now, how they frame the war between Israel and Hamas is very telling about the activists that are actually school board members. They referenced it as the war on Gaza, as though Gaza are the victims in this situation. No, the victims were the Israelis, the Jews that were slaughtered as a result of, let's be very clear, those Muslims in Gaza. In that greeting, the Ramadan greeting, they wrote, "Muslim students in particular are experiencing more emotional distress due to the war on Gaza. While we know when our next meal is, people in Gaza are dying of starvation." So this is what they're, I guess they're going to have a big Muslim meal and a shindig, and they're teaching the staff and the faculty on how to cook these meals and also how to help these emotionally distraught, I guess, Palestinian students. I don't think there's that many Palestinian students at GMSD. Maybe I'm wrong. What I find very telling, this is the same school board that were trying to cancel, and they actually were successful in some ways, Good Friday and also Easter Monday, because it was controversial. There were some students and some parents of students that felt uncomfortable having to celebrate, as though anybody was forced to go to church on Sunday, the death, resurrection of Jesus Christ. But it's very clear to me that the school board has not washed their hands clean of stepping into these political or religious matters, because that's what they would say. We just want to focus on education. And you hear the same argument from even local Republicans that are against school board primaries and making them partisan, where someone wanting to seek a seat on a school board in the burbs would have to identify as a Republican or a Democrat, a progressive or a conservative. And the argument there is that politics has no place in the schoolrooms. Well, it clearly does, because the message that Germantown school officials are sending is that Israel students, Jewish students, excuse me, we don't care about their emotional distress. And for the rest of the Christians, we're going to cancel your holidays. We're going to cancel Christmas. We're going to cancel Easter, Good Friday, because that is offensive. So I've got more on this story, but I do want to slip in a phone call. Well, we'll take a break. On the other side, Melanie Mosley, who is the leader of the fabulous Whitehaven Republican Club, is on our phone lines. Melanie, hang tight, because we are going to break, and I want to give you your say on the morning show. But I am curious from our listeners, moms and dads in the Germantown School District, does this offend you? And why I'm kind of shocked that there's not more ruckus by conservative Christians in the school board is they should be calling for Germantown School District to actually not promote Muslim and anti-Israel propaganda. I mean, eye for an eye, because the activists are coming after your traditions, your faith. And again, my call this morning, my charge would be for the local Republican Party to absolutely support partisan school board races, because politics has infiltrated our school district, i.e. what's happening at Germantown Middle School. This story up on ToddStarnes.com. We'll weigh in on it more on the other side of the break. Here's our telephone number, 901-260-5926. 901-260-5926. We'll be back right after the break. Don't go away. And welcome back to the morning show. Glad to have you guys joining us. Currently 39 degrees in East Memphis. Today, highs will be in the mid 60s. So full of sunshine and full of, as the kids say, good vibes and good energy. And I am very excited, because I'm going to be joining my friend Melanie Mosley, a great, great patriot in this city from Whitehaven. She is the founder of the Whitehaven Republican Club there, of which I am going to be there tonight, and I will be addressing. Melanie, welcome to the morning show. How are you, my friend?
I am good. How about yourself?
I cannot complain. Very excited to join you tonight at 6 o'clock.
I am glad that you accepted the invitation, and we look so forward to seeing you on tonight. You are a great speaker. You are a unique person for such a time as this, and we're so happy to host you on tonight.
Real quick, I wanted to get your reaction on our mayor, who is the top dog of America's most dangerous city, inviting the mayors of other dangerous cities like Chicago and New York City and L.A. to the Bluff City to discuss solutions to crime.
And, you know, with all due respect to the mayor, like I said, I say this respectfully, those mayors that he's inviting to this city, at this time of day, I would not go to their cities. And I don't understand, if they can't correct their own issues in their cities, why are we bringing them here? Not only those mayors have an even bigger influx with the migration crisis, with the illegal migration crisis coming from Texas. And so many people in there, and many black people in their communities are turning red. They're turning Republican. So I promise you, I cannot explain to you why he selected that group, but, you know, it is what it is, I guess.
Well, we'll be covering it. That presser, it's a closed-door meeting, but they are expecting to address members of the media, and I will try to get to that before I come to Whitehaven. Again, that event is tonight at 6 o'clock at the YMCA in Whitehaven. Melanie, thanks for dropping by. We'll see you later.
Thank you. Have a good day.
All right. Speaking of Mayor Eric Adams, want to welcome in Steve Gill, political contributor. Steve, you heard that. So our mayor is inviting Lori Lightfoot's predecessor, or successor rather, Brandon Johnson, Karen Bass from Los Angeles, and Eric Adams to Memphis. And it is only a black mayor invite only to help us find solutions to our crime problem. Rather interesting, Steve.
Yeah, we're going to bring people together. We're going to embrace diversity by embracing segregation and only talking to people who agree with us. Again, everything this mayor is doing in Memphis, that Mayor Adams is doing in New York, that we're seeing in Chicago, that we're seeing in D.C., that we're seeing in these major cities that are falling apart, is they keep doing the same thing that hasn't worked while trying to point the finger of racism at others, blaming those who have not been controlling these cities, controlling the out-of-control poverty that they have embraced with their policies. They're blaming others when they're not willing to do anything different than what keeps producing these horrific results.
And Eric Adams really needs to, exactly to your point, needs to be in the Big Apple, not the Bluff City, because you've got a slain officer. Name is Jonathan Diller. And I was reading the morning paper, and there's two headlines that caught my attention, because both President Trump and President Biden will be in New York City today. Trump will attend the wake of the slain NYPD officer. Again, Jonathan Diller is the name. While President Biden is expected to bring out the celebrities at a high-dollar fundraiser with Obama and Hillary Clinton. Now, members of the press asked KJP about this, and here was the official word from this administration. Cut three.
Relates to the death of the officer. Look, our hearts go out to this officer who tragically lost his life in the line of duty. We're also praying for his family during this difficult time, who now has an empty seat at their dinner table. President Biden is deeply grateful for the sacrifices police officers make to keep our community safe. This shooting is yet another painful reminder of the toll of gun violence, that what it's doing to inflict on families and our communities and our nation. And that's why the president signed more than two dozen executive actions. That's why we're able to pass a bipartisan agreement to deal with the gun violence that we're seeing in this country. Obviously, more work needs to be done. We need Congress to continue to act on making sure that our communities are safe. Again, our hearts go out to this officer and his family. It's a difficult time for them.
So she doesn't know the officer's name, and instead of blaming the thug who was not legally allowed to own the gun, he had 21 arrests, including 9 felonies. Who does she blame? She blames the gun. All too predictable.
Meanwhile, a Democrat liberal judge is wanting to give illegal aliens the right to bear arms. But yeah, while they're here illegally. Yeah, my favorite part is she won't mention the officer's name. Say his damn name, woman. And my favorite part about Eric Adams going to the Bluff City, going to Memphis, he refuses to go to the border because his security team says the border is too dangerous for him to visit. Dude, have you seen the crime reports from Memphis? Have you seen the violence in Memphis? He's going to Memphis, but he's afraid to go to the border?
It's a fair point. Absolutely fair point. All right, I want to get through a couple more headlines real quick, Steve. So Sacramento, California has declared itself to not only be a sanctuary city for illegals, but also transgenders. Their city council passed a resolution which took effect immediately, ensuring that no city resources will be used to criminalize trans people as if they were, let me continue, seeking transition-related care or to cooperate with jurisdictions seeking to enforce laws that criminalize the care elsewhere. Now, here are opponents and proponents on this resolution in cut number 11.
This is your opportunity to show the trans community that they are not alone. This is more than just posturing or friendly words to get votes. This is our lives on the line.
there are a whole lot more people who are experiencing like gender dysphoria and who need gender affirming care, I think, than a lot of folks realize.
We cannot be giving children cross-sex hormones. We can't give them surgeries that will change their sex.
What do you make of it, Steve? Are these the true victims in America?
Well, first of all, will they criminalize the behavior of transgenders when they, for example, go into a school like Covenant School and shoot up and kill people? When other transgenders commit these vicious, heinous crimes, stabbing and murdering people, as we're seeing far above their percentage of the population, the violence that is probably being exacerbated by the drugs that are being, you know, pushed into their bodies to do this transition, will their criminal behavior be treated as criminal behavior? And the idea that somehow trans are such victims of violence in this country is just not borne out by the facts. If anything's true, it's that transgenders are committing violent acts far above their proportion of the society.
You're exactly right. I mean, if I was a California resident, I would self-identify. Why? Well, because they were giving reparations out in San Francisco to the trans community. It's called the Guaranteed Income for Trans People, providing low-income transgender San Franciscans, with $1,200 each month to address their financial insecurities.
And no wonder, as one of the speakers was saying, there are a lot more trans than you know. It's like, well, yeah, because you're paying them to be trans. If you pay them to be heterosexual, to be law-abiding,
they would be straight
Christian,
dudes,
or Jewish residents, then you'd have a lot more of those. Maybe we ought to start paying people to not be mentally ill.
Leading me to, in your point, the Covenant School shooting anniversary, which was yesterday. So find me shocked and appalled that a Tennessee music venue is hosting a Trans Day of Vengeance concert just days after the one-year anniversary of that school shooting, in which, as you pointed out, a trans-identifying woman killed 3 children and 3 adults. Now, the flyer promoted by several bands say it's going to happen at the Graveyard Gallery in Murfreesboro. They say they're going to use it to raise money for a group that provides gender reassignment surgeries. Now, the Daily Wire has this story. They ask what Transgender Day of Vengeance means, and they said, we're not really advocating for vengeance, but why change the word visibility? Because they crossed out the word Trans Day of Visibility with vengeance. Steve?
Yeah, we're not calling for vengeance. We're just using it, and words matter. We still don't have the manifesto that explains in details what motivated this woman, whether or not she was abused or physically sexually assaulted at that school. There's a lot of speculation that that was the case, and the cover-up is worse than what may be in that manifesto. I would argue that the Trans Day of Vengeance was a year ago yesterday, when whatever vengeful act she took to kill innocent children and adults in vengeance for how she was treated, apparently, that was the Day of Vengeance. That was the Trans Day of Vengeance. And we ought to call it what it was. And the manifesto needs to be unredacted and released now. It's been a year. The authorities say that they are not still investigating the crime. Well, what are they investigating? What's in the manifesto and what was done to this young girl when she was at that school? There is plenty of smoke to justify releasing the full manifesto. And let's get to the bottom of what motivated her and what are they covering up.
It's interesting because in this report by the Daily Wire, they said that their aim is to, with the word vengeance, is to end the genocide against trans people. But if you look at the Department of Justice statistics, the genocide against trans people just does not exist. Okay, so last time we were talking about the riots at the University of Memphis, but it happened at Vanderbilt University, with several students ending up in the jail downtown, several in handcuffs. So it was the group behind the protests was the Vanderbilt Divest Coalition. They're very upset because they are claiming that the president of the school is supporting Israel and they want the university to divest. So what they do, they actually break into Kirkland Hall. They assault an officer. And now they're crying victim because they believe their voices were silenced. Now, here's one freshman. His name is Jack. He's part of the Vanderbilt Divest Coalition on his arrest. Take a listen in cut number 10.
I went to jail today. I was arrested at about 5 a.m. In my own university. I was taken, I was handcuffed, brought in the back of a police car, and taken downtown. We've been protesting inside Kirkland Hall to demand that our Chancellor, Daniel Diermeier, reinstate a referendum to divest our student government funds from a genocide ongoing in Gaza, to listen to student voices, and stop the suppression of pro-Palestinian organizers on this campus.
During the sit-in, students say they were denied access to food, water, and bathrooms, resulting in some who had to get resourceful in relieving themselves. That's before four of the students were arrested Wednesday morning, one charged with vandalism and the other three charged with assault.
Inside was far better than what I experienced at Kirkland. I was given access to water. I was given access to a bathroom. Imagine that. A student going to jail and having better access and more humane living conditions than that of a top 20 university in this country.
All right, Steve. Take a stab, my friend.
Yeah, you know, if I break into your house, how dare you not let me have access to your refrigerator and the bathroom and make sure that the toilet paper is the really thick, comfortable kind. If you don't want to go to jail, don't commit a crime. I mean, these are supposedly smart students. You know, maybe they were admitted to Vanderbilt under a DEI plan where they're really not very smart. But if you commit a crime, if you vandalize a building, if you urinate inside that building rather than the bathrooms that might have been down the hall.
Yeah, they were peeing in the building.
Get arrested.
Good point. They were peeing in the building.
Yeah, you assault the cop. By the way, a reporter covering this was arrested from the Nashville scene, was arrested by the police so that he could not report what was going on their campus. You know, to me, the assault on the officer was horrific and deserves punishment. The assault on the First Amendment by the Vanderbilt security detail and by Vanderbilt University shows that it is a top-tier university in its own mind, but not in respect to respecting the Constitution, respecting rights, and respecting truth in the First Amendment. It is a second-tier university embracing these radical students. And parents, before you send your kid there to spend 50, 60, 70 grand a year running up student debt that they'll be whining about that we ought to be paying for years from now, think about real colleges and universities that respect our country, respect our laws, and respect the Constitution.
Well said. Going to leave it there. You know, it's good to see Nashville in the news for once. It's typically Memphis, so I had to take a stab at your city. Steve, thanks for dropping by.
Thanks, my friend.
All right, more on the other side. 901-260-5926. We're going to have some fun. Don't go away. Here's some good news on a follow-up of the pastor that was shot outside of his church in South Memphis. Pastor Clemmy Livingston is the pastor's name. Well, he's set to preach for the first time since the shooting this Easter Sunday, which is pretty miraculous, and I love to see this story. He is relearning how to speak. Of course, the thugs shot him right in the face, right through the jaw, and he is still undergoing a lot of serious surgeries. Anyhow, he caught up with Fox 13 discussing his road to recovery and also the fact that he absolutely had to be back in his church for this Sunday Easter sermon. Take a listen to this audio in Cut 20.
I believe in the scriptures where Paul said, I could do all things through Christ who strengthened me. Stood in the pulpit of many Easters in the past. But this is the first time that I have went into the pulpit as a wounded soldier. Well, I'm wounded. I prayed over it, and I feel like that I'm doing what God wants me to do. I'm capable of doing this. You really don't know how hard you can pray. And though you've been through a crisis like I've been.
So it's good to see him getting better and stronger every single day. And as you heard in that audio, he says, this is the first time I am speaking as a true warrior, as a wounded son of God, and certainly was wounded. In other news, the Shelby County judge, Judge Melissa Boyd, this is a follow-up. This is a dandy and a doozy. She's headed to the same jail where she used to send inmates. She's going right alongside of them. As you guys know, as we followed this story, she failed two of the requirements under her bond conditions. because she had been taken to jail. She was given a bond, and her requirement was that she would be sober. She wouldn't abuse alcohol, and she wouldn't abuse drugs. Well, earlier this month, she failed to take two of her drug screenings, and when they finally got to the judge, Judge Melissa Boyd, to take these screenings, they found that she had been doing lines of cocaine and also alcohol. So her bond was revoked yesterday by Judge Roy Morrigan. And you've got prosecutors and defenders taking two sides of this story. And I'm curious to hear from our listeners, should the judge be sent to jail for committing this crime? You know, this is a woman that has sent a lot of criminals to prison for drug abuse. And now she is committing the same crime. So I want you to take a listen. These are the defense prosecutors arguing she needs help. All right. She needs to be outside of a jail to properly go through a rehab treatment. Take a listen to this in cut number two.
When I told a number of people that I was talking to you today, it was interesting, though. They all said, would you please just ask her?
That wrong audio, that's on me. Take a listen to the state prosecutors on Judge Boyd and why she must go to jail and serve out her sentence. Take a listen in cut 23.
She's basically thumbing her nose at the court, saying, I'm not going to do one thing that you've ordered me to do. I'm not going to call into pretrial supervision. I'm not going to go by the office. I'm not going to submit to drug screens. I'm not going to stop using cocaine. We don't want to incarcerate her, but we do want to keep her from harming herself with continued cocaine use. And it's severe. Those levels are high. Continued alcohol use.
So the prosecutors obviously are the state, and they are asking that the judge revoke the bond, send her to jail. Now, the defense is saying the following, and I've got the quotes. The defendant, which would be the judge, needs long-term inpatient treatment. If your goal is to help an individual, give them the right tools to get there. They also said putting Ms. Boyd in jail and letting her detox doesn't fix the long-term problem of getting her well and recovering from this problem, from this addiction. This is what the defense is telling Judge, and in this case, this is Judge Roy Morrigan. Well, here's what the judge had to say, ultimately ruling against the defense, siding with the state here in cut 21.
The defendant needs long-term inpatient treatment if that's the case, because if your goal is to help an individual, get them the right tool to get there.
So the judge will remain in custody until either a plea agreement is reached or until her trial, which is set to begin at the end of August. In a related headline, the final vote in the state legislature of whether to remove this judge from the bench is coming up on April 4th. And if I was a predicting person, I believe the state legislature is going to send Judge Melissa Boyd the boot. Before we go, I want to remind you, tomorrow we are taking the morning show live on the road. We're going to be hanging out with the Shelby County Republicans Women's Club, who has partnered with the Mid-South Food Bank to fight hunger in this region. They're hosting a food drive at Big B Coffee tomorrow morning, starting at 7 when this show begins. It's going to be a lot of fun. Drop by, hang out with the morning crew. Also, bring some canned goods, grab a cup of coffee as you head out the door. And we'd love to see all of you guys out there. More on the other side. Senator Bill Hagerty joins the show. Don't go away. Joining us on. You are all doing well as we start this busy hour of hour number two on the morning show. And right now, I do want to go to the phone lines, speaking with Senator Bill Hagerty, who is in Memphis yesterday discussing public safety. Of course, we'll get into the southern border, the latest on his legislation, his amendments that Democrats overwhelmingly voted down. Let's go right now to the senator. Good morning, Senator. Thanks for joining the program.
And good morning. It's always great to be with you. It's always great to be here in Memphis.
So real quick, to get your reaction from yesterday's meet with the district attorney, our police chief was there, and Paul Young, talking about public safety, your takeaway from the meeting?
Well, there were many more people there too, various groups and organizations that are all engaged. in trying to address the crime that's going on here and how to address the causes of it and what's happening in people's homes or what's not happening that should be, to particularly focus on young people who are engaged in crime. Our conversations yesterday were really aimed at getting me up to speed in terms of the various efforts that are underway here in Memphis to try to address it, and then to discuss how federal resources could be brought to bear to try to help it. And we really talked a lot about how to obtain better coordination so we get the greatest efficiency possible as we try to deal with this incredibly massive problem here.
Well, we appreciate the federal spotlight you're placing on our crime problem, because if you were to pull every Shelby County in and Memphian and surrounding counties, crime is going to be number one, much like another issue like the southern border. I was looking at some polling across this country, Senator. It is issue number one, and yet Democrats repeatedly voted against your two amendments. And I want you to explain both of those. The first one we talked about last time you joined the show, which excludes illegal aliens from congressional appointments and the assignment of electoral college votes. The second one I assumed was a no-brainer, which would stop the secret migrant flights of illegals into the U.S. And we as taxpayers are funding this.
Yeah, I was just shocked to find out about it, and we actually verified it with a whistleblower who's involved with one of the charter companies that they're using, and their company's flown just in the past 4 months, tens, I'm talking plural, tens of thousands of these illegal migrants into America. They're coming from Cuba, from Haiti, from Venezuela. They're being flown in here under the dark of night secretly by Joe Biden. We understand that they've gone to 43 different airports in America, so rather than cross the border on the ground, they're just flying them over the border and bringing directly into cities here in America. My presumption is they're bringing them to Blue City airports, because you and I talked about this with the previous amendment. They, you know, my earlier legislation would have counted only American citizens for the purposes of apportioning congressional districts and therefore electoral votes. If you just look at the number of people that Joe Biden has led into this country since he took office, that would account for 13 congressional districts alone. Think about that. You think about how close control is in the Congress is right now. That would change the balance of power. Think about these presidential races, 13 electoral votes. That's more than the state of Tennessee has. So this is what it's all about. It's about controlling. It's about getting power. And if you think about where they've located their sanctuary cities, and by the way, most likely where they're flying these people from these other countries, if these sanctuary cities are located in states that are losing population, like New York, Illinois, California. They put their sanctuaries like New York and Manhattan, Chicago, Illinois, San Francisco, Los Angeles. These are the states that are losing citizens, the states like our own then. What they're doing is they're backfilling with non-citizens and then counting them for the purposes of allocating votes and therefore power here in America. And it gives disproportionate power to states that have a large number of immigrant population, because they're leveraging those illegal immigrants in order to dilute our vote here in Tennessee.
And as discouraging as it is as an American to see every single Senate Democrat is, I guess, pro-invasion at our southern border, the silver line is you've got people like Elon Musk retweeting your floor speech. And I've got to ask what that was like getting that, I mean, worldwide exposure on what's happening as a result of your amendments, which I believe Chuck Schumer did not want, because what they finally got it onto the House floor at like 1 o'clock in the morning.
You're exactly right, Ben. I mean, this has been Chuck Schumer's strategy. He mismanages the timelines so that if he follows normal rules in the Senate, the government would have shut down. He delayed. He waited too late, and he got us to the point where the government was going to shut down going through normal order unless he had the consent of every one of the senators. I told Chuck I wasn't going to grant my consent until we put my legislation on the floor. And I got everybody on the record voting on whether we're going to use taxpayer funds to fly illegal immigrants into this country and resettle them here. He said there was no way, there was no way, there was no way. We got up till 20 minutes before the shutdown, before he finally conceded. And I think his brief was that nobody would see this if he waited till the middle of the night for it to happen. We actually crossed the line into the next day, but we were already on the floor working on it. And he thought probably by 1:30 in the morning, who would ever see it? Well, Elon Musk, as you said, just retweeted my floor speech. Over 40 million people have seen it now. The American public are disgusted. They're enraged. And we have put a pin in the Democrats' tactic of putting their so-called border security bill on the floor. You've heard this. You turn on CNN, the Republicans voted against our border security bill. Joe Biden's, that was his talking point. That wasn't a border security bill. That was basically an effort to get more resources to the effort to resettle people here in America. They wouldn't allow us to amend it, to fix it. They put it on the floor once and then ripped it right off so they could get to a Ukraine vote. Every Republican, not every Republican, but most Republicans, including me, voted against that. We had to. Every Democrat was able to say, I voted for the border security, and now let's blame it on the Republicans. This set of votes, one, showing the motive, again, that they want to count illegal migrants, and two, demonstrating one of the most egregious tactics that they're using, flying 320,000 people. They flew in here by charter planes last year from other countries. That's the volume of people that they're flying in here. Wow. Again, millions coming across the border. But if you just think about it, people are outraged. We've got to fix this. And I think we're going to fix it in November when we change the White House, the Senate, and then hopefully hold the House of Representatives.
Yeah, hopefully. So I was one of the 40 million that watched the floor speech. And one thing you pointed out, I completely missed as a news guy. And give me the timestamp on when you actually confronted AG Merrick Garland, because he refused to tell you that illegals should not come to this country. So I did my research. I went back to that committee hearing where you asked this. It's a short soundbite. I want to play it for our listeners here in cut number 27.
Just this week in Guatemala, Vice President Harris sent a message to those that were perhaps contemplating coming to our country illegally. Do not come. Is that a message that you can deliver, Attorney General, sitting right there?
Look, I think that Vice President Harris has been very deeply involved in the kind of law enforcement and other requirements that we're looking to set up. She was instrumental in moving us to establish this joint task force. So there are a lot of different messaging kind of issues involved, and some of them involve getting at the root causes of why people are leaving.
Senator, I mean, how on earth? That is literally America's top prosecutor.
Exactly. He's our top cop, and he can't tell them not to come. He's our top cop, and he can't enforce the laws in America. It's a disgrace. This administration clearly, and Joe Biden promised this when he was running for office, Ben, you remember him using the code word, we're going to transform America? Mm-hmm. Well, that's what this is all about. And you know, we got one of the Democrat congressmen. In fact, she's the congresswoman from the same district in Brooklyn that used to be Chuck Schumer's district before he came to the Senate. We got her on record saying that she needs these illegal migrants coming to her district so she can hold on to her power. She said, I need them for redistricting purposes. She doesn't want to lose her district. It's the same district that James Madison High School is in. This is a high school that they have told the students to go and study from home via Zoom. They have to use that high school now to house illegal migrants. And this woman is saying, I need these illegal migrants to hold on to my power. Oddly enough, and this is too rich, that's the same high school, the one that they shut down and sent the kids home from, just to house these illegal migrants, same high school that Chuck Schumer and Bernie Sanders attended as kids.
Wow. All right, real quick, before we let you go, speaking of Chuck Schumer, you saw the floor speech where he called for new elections in Israel, of course, criticizing Netanyahu. And then this was right after the fact that our UN Security Council refused to stand with our ally Israel. I mean, speaking to doing anything to hang on to power, of course, they're looking at Minnesota. You've got the holdouts in Michigan. I mean, they're willing to jeopardize our ally Israel in order to hang on to the Oval Office.
It's just amazing, Ben, the fact that they would. These are the pearl clutchers that always talk about we've got to protect democracy. They're trying to destroy the, you know, a legitimately democratically elected ally, the only democracy in the Middle East. They're trying to take it down. And one of my friends said this the other day. I thought it was funny, but also quite true. He said the only two-state solution that Joe Biden and Chuck Schumer want has to do with Michigan and Minnesota.
Wow. Well said. All right, Senator, thank you for joining us. Thank you again for being in the Bluff City yesterday. Best of luck, and we appreciate you fighting for all of us in this day.
Thank you, man. All the best.
All right, going to open up our phone lines to that discussion. 901-260-5926, 901-260-5926. He's exactly right. The two-state solution that they're talking about, Minnesota and Michigan. And you're watching the polling, especially with young people in this country. They're upset with this administration for a couple different reasons. Now, common sense, Gen Zers, millennials, they're upset with this administration because they cannot afford groceries. They cannot afford gas in their cars. Now, the radical activists, of which we have many in the city, are upset because they are funding a genocide, quote unquote genocide. And apparently, The Germantown School District here agrees with them. We've got that story, your comments on that appalling story where they are pushing pro-Hamas and anti-Israel propaganda to your middle school students. That all coming up right after the break. Don't go away. And welcome back to the morning show. Speaking of illegal immigration, somehow this slipped my attention, but no longer, because a Tennessee bill would require police, Shelby County Sheriff officers, law enforcement across the board in the volunteer state to report when they catch illegal immigrants. Again, to me, this is a no-brainer, but of course, it's getting a lot of pushback. Now, it passed the State House and Senate. So this is headed to the desk of Governor Bill Lee. The bill would require law enforcement in Tennessee to report any quote-unquote undocumented immigrants to federal officials. Senator Brent Taylor, a good friend of the show, is behind this legislation and maybe why he's getting so much pushback. Now, we've got the senator on this bill because he says what's happening is the more illegals that are being harbored in Shelby County is leading to more crime. And his whole thing is we need to stop crime and save Memphis. Here is the senator, Cut 18.
I do not anticipate that this will be used to discriminate against anyone. It's people who have broken the law, and law enforcement has knowledge that they're in this country illegally. They are subject to being reported to the appropriate federal officials.
Marcio Calvo is the CEO of Latino Memphis. It's a nonprofit organization providing legal services and resources. Now, according to Mario, he says this legislation is a hate bill and will ultimately create racial profiling and mistrust with law enforcement. Here is what he told Fox 13 in cut number 19.
When I first heard about the bill, you know, the first reaction is like, why are we doing this? You know?
An immigrant himself, he says this legislation will create racial profiling and mistrust with law enforcement.
It really puts many immigrants, particularly victims, at risk of not willing to collaborate with authorities. Like, people are not going to be willing to put a police report if they have been a victim of a crime. But instead, we need to build trust between law enforcement and communities.
So who do you stand with, Brent Taylor or Mario? That's the question. Should illegals be allowed to just run around in our city and in our county and in our state? 901-260-5926, 901-260-5926. I would agree with Brent Taylor because we have cases across the country where they've tried this and it's led to deadly consequences. So I have a conspiracy and a theory on what actually happened to the Francis Scott Key Bridge. And I've seen all of the different theories. Some people saying it was a cyber attack. It is a new form of war that we're seeing in this country where they're attacking our commerce, our transportation, and that all could be. But I believe, and half of me is kidding, the other half is not, that the reason this Francis Scott Key Bridge collapsed was because, according to the Washington Post, Francis Scott Key, the author of this song and the poem, The Star-Spangled Banner, is a racist. I mean, leave it to the Washington Post to remind its readers that the man that the bridge was named after was a problematic figure. So in this Washington Post article, it is titled, "Who was Francis Scott Key, a controversial poet the bridge is named after?" The paper went on to remind readers about Key's racist views. As I mentioned, Francis Scott Key is known for writing the poem that became America's national anthem. He wrote the lyrics the morning after the 1814 British attack on Fort McHenry, which is also right beside the collapsed bridge. Now, as the Washington Post previously reported, the Star-Spangled Banner did not become the national anthem until more than a century after it was written because of controversy, partly over Key's racist views. They go on to cite one of the verses in the Star-Spangled Banner, and they write, and they cite this verse, "No refuge could save the hireling and slave from the terror of flight or the groom of the grave. And the Star-Spangled Banner in triumph doth wave or the land of the free and the home of the brave. The writer of this Washington Post article went on to say that Key was a slave owner who opposed abolition and made racist remarks about black people. However, they did not include in their Washington Post article that actually Francis Scott Key defended several slaves, and he also freed several of his own. Now, why I believe this could have been an inside job is because look at other key monuments across this country that vandals tried to deface in the name of equality, DEI, and righting the wrong of history, of slavery. The Francis Scott Key Monument in Baltimore was defaced back in 2017 with red paint, spray painted with the quote racist anthem and blood on his hands. So that is my theory. My conspiracy is it's actually not an inside cyber attack. It's actually just radical activists that are triggered by Francis Scott Key. But what say you? 901-260-5926. Want to go to our phone lines right now. A great patriot and a friend of mine, Bob Hendry, joining the show. Bob, top of the morning to you, and what is on your mind?
Hey, man. Listen, I called in to discuss the question of the legislation being tossed up there about requiring local police to turn illegals into federal law enforcement. And while on the surface, I think that's a good idea, the challenge becomes when you're dealing with this community of people who have escaped totalitarian regimes is that they already do not trust the police. They couldn't trust the police in their own countries. Their people would just disappear in the middle of the night. There were hit squads. You understand how governments work in Latin America and how this is done. There's a reason people are streaming to America. I'm not sure what the solution is, but it has to be something that enforces the ability for the people who are here, who are good immigrants, who are legal immigrants, to want to trust our American law enforcement systems. And if we start going about trying to round them all up, they are experts in these communities at avoiding law enforcement, and they will put into practice the same techniques they used in their own countries to avoid being arrested by those squads. They'll see the police as the bad guys, and this is a big challenge in executing this kind of law. The first step is going to be seal the damned border and get it done. Quit fooling about with these little five-minute videos that come off the congressional floor where we're interviewing all of these bureaucrats. And, you know, I would take issue with the senator on this issue because we have the ability to shut down the government until our border is secure. We just lack the political will to do it. Thanks.
Well, Bob, I certainly appreciate the call and I share a lot. And if you're still on, I've got a question for you. About the bill, I'm wondering for State Senator Brent Taylor if it is just a bill about messaging, and does it have teeth? We'll see, and I hear your points. It's sad that the state legislature has to get involved, to your point, where our federal government should be shutting that down. To the point about keeping the border open as a result of funding the government, because we talked about that on Monday where we had even members of the Tennessee delegation voting for this bill in the House that went over Chuck Schumer and then the president signed it. What do you make of this idea of we've got to shut down the government full stop before we can move forward in an attempt to stop what's happening at the southern border?
Well, we don't want to have to do that, but we're in a position where we have to do that because nothing else has worked. We've been fighting this question of the border for decades. In the 1980s, when I was stationed in Southern California in the Marine Corps, there were illegals streaming across the border back then. We haven't secured the border properly across the southern border with Mexico ever. It's time that we do it so that we can then begin to clean up the mess we have in our house. And if it means taking extreme measures at this point, then it's time. It's time to quit banging about political positions and getting scared about what would happen if they shut down aspects of the federal government or all of it, and just get it done.
Well, what's
why
it?
Congress won't do it is a great question.
Well, why House Republicans say they won't do it is because it campaigns really bad and they're trying to hang on to their seats. But I don't know if they're in their districts. I don't think they really care about a temporary government shutdown. I think what they care about is that, I mean, young, beautiful girls are being killed in Athens, Georgia. I think what they care about is the fentanyl crisis coming through the southern border. So that doesn't campaign well. It seems like we have a little bit of a conflict of interest. And I would look at a lot of the lobbying groups behind, quote unquote, Republicans and conservatives. And you'll understand why, to Bob's point, they aren't doing anything about it. Bob?
Follow the money.
Follow the money. Absolutely.
Follow the money.
It's not that difficult.
Every congressman, it's not that difficult. We now have the tools to be able to do that. It requires a very simple internet search. You can examine every United States congressman, whether in the Senate or whether in Congress. You can look at who all their donors are. You can see where that money's coming from. And then you ask yourself, how did this, for example, our own congressman in the 8th District who voted in favor of this, how did he go from nothing to being on the Ways and Means Committee? And now that he's been on the Ways and Means Committee, why has he done nothing to fix the federal deficit, to fix the border crisis, to present a solution that allows us to be able to operate only the essential aspects of government while securing our border? You haven't heard a thing from him.
Bob, it's a great question, and we are going to be cut off by the computer, so appreciate your call.
Awesome.
Yeah, there's conflict of interest. A lot of these people make agreements to get powerful positions, and then they get to Congress, they get to Washington, and they cave. It's that simple. It's really not difficult, people. Open your eyes. We'll be right back.
Do y'all remember how in Leave the World Behind, it started with a massive cargo ship, kind of like the one that just crashed into the Key Bridge? Why was there another bridge that had an accident and caught fire in another major city? What are the chances that these are major cities and these bridges lead in and out of these major cities and they are all of a sudden being literally destroyed? Along with them telling us that this solar eclipse on April 8th, the National Guard is supposed to be here. We won't have cell service. It's causing a massive uproar due to people trying to get in and out of major cities. Are they trying not to allow people to get in and out of these major cities during the eclipse?
What is happening in the country? That is the question. Now, I was on social media last night prepping for the show, and within 2 minutes, I saw more about P. Diddy. I saw more about Jeffrey Epstein, the bridge collapse being an inside job, the vanishing of young people across the country, crime, bad economy, low wages, and is it any wonder that young Americans are far less happy than older Americans? That was one TikToker that we came back from the show with, which, welcome back to the morning show. So a new Gallup poll came out, and what Gallup does every single year is they do a world happiness report. Happiness is described in this report as a state of well-being and contentment, or joy. I do not think joy and happiness are synonymous. I think joy is a lot more stable than happiness, right? If you have joy in your heart, and I would believe and firmly believe that that comes from a piece of God, these things that we're dealing with in this country won't completely throw your happiness into a tizzy and you have a meltdown like we're seeing all over Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok. As a matter of fact, here is another TikToker. Here is how he describes the state of America. The song is called Life in America. Enjoy. His name is Ro, everyone. This is Gen Z in the state of this country. Cut it.
Come to America and work your whole life. We're all just rats inside a twisted maze where profit is time. Fill me with chemicals and sell me a cure. We're all just plastic little piggies that don't know what we're worth.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Rowe. That's a catchy tune. As you heard, he's talking about the fact that we're all being vaxxed. We cannot pay our bills working one job, so we've got to work two jobs. He talks about the fact that, again, to the point of these bridges collapsing. So all of these young people in this country are very unhappy. And so what this Gallup World Happiness Report found is that because of people under age 30 being so unhappy, they've actually dragged the United States of America out of the top 20th happiest countries in the world for the first time in the report's history. Now, in this report, Lithuania ranked first in happiness for people under the age of 30 between 2021 and 2023, followed by Israel, Serbia, Iceland, and Denmark. Denmark ranked first in happiness for people age 60 and older, followed by Finland, Norway, Sweden, and Iceland. How are those people happy? They say they're socialist countries. I don't buy it. It's also really freaking cold, and I'm not a fan of the cold. But back to this study. So what they do is they separate people that are under the age of 30 and people that are over the age of 30 and those that are older than 60. And so overall, the U.S. now ranks at 23rd. To my point, we've slipped out of the top 20. Last year, we held the spot at 15. For those under age 30, if we just looked at the happiness of millennials and Gen Z, the U.S. ranks 62 in happiest in this ranking. Now, the opposite is true for Americans over the age of 60, where the U.S. would rank number 10 as the happiest country in America. So what they say is the happiness gap is growing in many parts of the world, but specifically right here in the United States of America. And I'm very curious from our listeners that are either under the age of 30 and those that are over the age of 60, why that gap is getting wider by the day. Now, I get this question a lot. What is up with Gen Z and why are they so bat crap insane? They are insane. Don't get me wrong. But on the flip side, when I see what I saw at the University of Memphis, where these kids quite literally had meltdowns because of the First Amendment, they heard something they didn't like. So the first thing they did was scream and cry and actually threaten to kill conservatives. I saw a lack of parenting. Whoever raised these kids are responsible. I point the finger, not at Gen Z, I point them at parents. I point them at weak professors and teachers. I point them at weak school districts. We have quite literally watered down this generation so much that a boy, Kyle Rittenhouse, can cause the entire city of Memphis to erupt into chaos. If I ever would have behaved like those students did at the University of Memphis, I don't care if I'm 22, my dad would have beat my butt. And so when I look at these kids, not only are they not being trained well, they've also been raised on social media. And as I said at the top of this segment, you scroll for 2 seconds, you think the world is actually ending. I mean, we haven't even talked about the solar eclipse and the fact that the solar eclipse total totality will be over Nineveh. 5 cities named Nineveh. I didn't even know there was 5 cities in America named Nineveh. It also is going to be going over the Ark, which the Ark exists. It's just a replica and it's in Kentucky. These people are absolutely having meltdowns. So I think it's a little bit complex, but not at all. I think that we have embraced stupidity in this country and we've tried to normalize stupidity, like the thing with men wearing dresses, for example, or the story we just talked about where folks have tried to actually tear down the Francis Scott Key Bridge and monuments because it made them feel uncomfortable. Now, I want to end on a positive note because this segment so far has not been positive. And this is a great reminder to go pick up Todd's book, Twilight's Last Gleaming, Can America Be Saved? Because I think it can be. And one thing that's interested me about Generation Z is, yes, we're incredibly weak. We are crybabies. But because the mainstream media and the deep state is under attack right now with the rise of alternative mediums where people are finally starting to wake up and hear the truth for the first time, I'm seeing a lot of these young people walk away from this liberal group think tank, which is very powerful, by the way. If you were raised in a school district at the start of pre-K and you're told every single day as a kid that has no political ideological affiliations that this country is abhorrent, that it is racist, that the founders tried to make this a theocracy, so we should therefore be agnostic or atheistic. look at what they're telling black students, that this country fundamentally not only hated them, but still hates them. It's not shocking to see the place that we are in, but there is a silver lining. And it's being reflected in polling, specifically young men, where they're waking up and they're realizing we've got to fight. We've got to fight against the people that have sowed these seeds of lies. And lies hate truth. I mean, it's very clear. You speak truth to someone who has embodied lies. You watch them implode. I mean, look what happened in our city, right? You have these Republicans that fight back against these lies that have been distributed and disseminated by the Democrats here, and they are called every name in the book. But people are starting to listen to that message. And as I was winding down for the night, and I was incredibly depressed, kind of, because of all of the videos we just talked about, and America is no longer a happy country because we slipped out of the world happiness rankings, I stumbled across Ashley Hayes, who has millions of views and millions of likes. Now, she is a Christian TikToker that speaks to a very dark algorithm. And the algorithm would be TikTok. And it's encouraging because there are starting to be more Ashleys in this world. Take a listen to her advice, not to just Gen Z, but to people that have been lied to that are finally starting to wake up. Take a listen in Cut 12.
It is up to you to fight the system. We may not be able to come together and actively, physically fight this government like we did in 1775, but you know what? We can rise up in a different way. There are more and more people waking up right now because the evil is getting so obvious. And it's a beautiful time to be alive. It's tiring because we still have to sit in it. But man, is God good. He keeps me steady. He keeps me peaceful during all of this chaos. So I urge you, if you are starting to see this stuff, if you're starting to see through what is going on, start standing up to it. Start being bold in Jesus' name, because we are fighting evil. And this is 100% a spiritual battle that we are in, and we need to fight as such.
And as I wrap that segment, because I could not add anything more to that because she's so spot on, I was reminded of a verse in Ephesians 6:11, and you probably learned this if you grew up in Sunday school, but we'll wrap up this segment with this reminder. It is time, and I'm now quoting the scripture verse, to put on the whole armor of God that you will be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. End quote. We'll be right back. All right, so imagine getting a phoner from KJP, the DEI hire for the administration. She phones into WBT Radio in Charlotte, North Carolina, which I would assume was probably a friendly as opposed to adversarial interview. But the host correctly asked the question on everybody's mind, which is, does President Biden have dementia? She flips out. And it's a 2-minute soundbite because it's interesting, because it's wild, because she loses it on and ultimately hangs up on these radio hosts. We've got the audio, cut number two.
When I told a number of people that I was talking to you today, it was interesting, though. They all said, would you please just ask her, does the president have dementia? And so before I move on from that, does he?
That, Mark, I can't even believe you're asking me this question. That is a incredibly offensive question to ask.
But you know people ask it.
No. You're taking us down this rabbit hole. Let me be very clear about this. For the past several years, the president's physician has laid out in a comprehensive way the president's health. This is a president, if you watch him every day, if you really pay attention to his record and what he has done, you will see exactly how focused he's been on the American people, how historic his actions have been. And so I'm not even going to truly, really, take the premise of your question. I think It is incredibly insulting, and so we can, you know, we can move on to the next question.
Gas prices and grocery prices, then, big topics here in North Carolina. How does Mr. Biden win votes when people don't have as much disposable income?
Look, the president understands. He grew up in a middle-class family, a working-class family in Scranton, Pennsylvania. He gets it. He understands how difficult it is for Americans who are sitting around their kitchen table every month trying to figure out what they're going to pay for. You have to remember, when the president walked into this administration, there were multiple crises happening. There was COVID. There was the economy was in the tailspin because of the last administration, because of what the President Trump left us with. Now you're asking me about gas prices. The president took action on gas prices. Let's not forget, Russia's invasion on Ukraine skyrocketed prices of gas. And because the president took action, we see we are in a different place than we were a year ago on gas prices. Eggs, milk, seafood products, all the important groceries, those costs have gone down because of what this president has been able to do. And with that, thank you so much, Mark. Have an amazing, amazing day.
Wow. Wow. She hung up. Wow. I mean, Mark, this you listen, I am nominating you to get a press corps badge, and you need to go to the White House. I'm sorry, but you asked 3-4 incredibly salient, important questions that are all front of mind, nothing out of bounds, no baba booing or anything like that, right? And you did it exactly right on. And I don't understand. I don't understand the fragility of this person. I mean,
no.
So there you go. KJP just hangs up the call because he asked a fair, tough question, which is, President Biden absolutely has dementia. Defend the guy. She couldn't do that. It's incredibly offensive. Bye-bye. Hangs up the phone. Which leads me to more thin-skinned members of the media. So we've talked a lot about Ronna McDaniel. Yesterday, she got fired. Or was it the day before? This has all been a blur of a week. So the Washington Post just came out with more details about this contract. So the latest is Ronna is going to be suing MSNBC, or she's seeking that and getting legal counsel. She's demanding that she get her 2-year contract, which was $300,000 a year. So she's going to make $600,000 without even having to do any airtime, which is kind of a nice deal. But it's not, because a couple different agencies. So in this world, you've got a media agent, a talent agent, and they're these massive corporations. They look at talent and they help them get jobs. That's what happened to Ronna. Now, her agent is still with her, but there's been a couple other agents that have dropped her because of her claims about the 2020 election and how it was stolen. So MSNBC is now hailing corporate because they finally cut ties with Ronna McDaniel after a whopping 4 days. Take a listen to this in Cut 14.
I just have to say, when somebody does the right thing, I feel like it should be acknowledged as publicly as we acknowledged our outrage. And so I know how I feel about it. I am grateful to Caesar for actually making the right decision. I think it was the right decision.
It's not even about hiring somebody who has Trump ties. This was a really specific case because of Ms. McDaniel's and her involvement in the election interference stuff. And I'm grateful that our leadership was willing to do the bold, strong, resilient thing.
Companies make mistakes, sometimes very big ones, sometimes very publicly. Right? It looks like our company listened to us, to you, and did what was right.
So according to this Washington Post piece, Ronna was concerned before she got the contract that she would face harsh interviews. I'm reading from this story. Not only from the host, but also liberal-leaning viewers, and would not respond to her positively. They go on to say her original preference was just to appear on NBC News. However, in a call with corporate management, the woman's last name is Jones. You'll hear this in the piece. Jones and McDaniel spoke, had a very friendly conversation, and they said they wanted her to go on not just NBC, but also MSNBC. So she apparently left very heartened by the call. This was, again, before she got her contract. So McDaniel, Ronna agreed to appear on both networks after a series of informal discussions, and they improved the contract. That was until her interview with Meet the Press. The lead woman that she was on the phone call with, Mrs. Jones, then privately told all of the MSNBC anchors who you just heard on Friday and Saturday that McDaniel would no longer appear on the network. So she's still going to be on NBC, but not on MSNBC. Management reassured the hosts that they would still have editorial independence over their respective shows. Now, as of Tuesday, McDaniel had not even known that she had been terminated and her contract had been taken back. She learned through the media. She's preparing to sue the network, expects to be paid for her 2-year contract. This is interesting. So she was going to release a statement after Chuck Todd had a meltdown after her interview on Sunday. And the anchors, and after the anchors attacked her, I guess she was going to release a statement saying she was unimpressed with the attacks by the hosts on NBC. NBC Management Corporate told her not to do that. And then ultimately, she learned by her agent that they were going to cut ties and she no longer has a job. Speaking of MSNBC, because we're going to wrap up with this. So the mayor of Baltimore, instead of spending his time talking to the media about the recovery efforts of what happened with the Francis Scott Bridge, he spent his evening on Joy Reid's show on MSNBC. And there was a person that wrote, "This is Baltimore's DEI hire." One person. And where does he run? Right to the arms of Joy Reid to say this is all an attack on black people by white men in this country. Talk about priorities. Cut number one.
I know, and we all know, and you know very well, that black men and young black men in particular have been the boogeyman for those who are racist and think that only straight, wealthy white men should have a say in anything. We've been the boogeyman from them since the first day they brought us to this country. And what they mean by DEI, in my opinion, is duly elected incumbent. We know what they want to say, but they don't have the courage to say the N-word. And the fact that I don't believe in their untruthful and wrong ideology, and I am very proud of my heritage and who I am and where I come from, scares them, because me being at my position means that their way of thinking, their way of life, of being comfortable and suffering, and while everyone else suffers, is going to be at risk, and they should be afraid, because that's my purpose in life.
Priorities, bro. I mean, Brandon Scott, that was the mayor of Baltimore, saying that anybody that criticism his handling and that they're just too scared to actually say that word. Unbelievable. Hey, before we scoot, join me tomorrow morning at Big B Coffee. I'll be joining the Shelby County Republican Women's Club. They partnered up with the Mid-South Food Bank. The show will be live from 7 to 9. Drop by, hang out. Also, tonight, starting at 6, I'll be speaking at the Whitehaven Republican Club. Would love to see you all there. That is at the YMCA in Whitehaven. Take care.